Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the No Mind Podcast. It's Tuesday, January 4th. I hope everybody had a restful and lovely and joyful holiday season. I want to remind you very quickly that the email address for the podcast is nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, so if there are any comments you would like to make about this or any other podcast, please feel free to use any of those venues. Again, the email address, nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com, the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, or my own personal Facebook page. All are suitable places to leave comments, questions, podcast subject ideas, anything you'd like to say relative to the podcast. I also want to remind you that the podcast is available directly from the Audioboom website, and I will link that on our Facebook page as well as on Spotify, so you can find the podcast in either of those locations. Something else I want to mention as well, and this came up in a conversation I was having with my brother, actually, about the podcast and karate in general. I want it clear that whenever I say something, I don't expect my comment to be taken universally. Meaning, I don't expect that you will interpret what I say as a universal comment about karate right across the board. I can only speak, as any of us can, from my own anecdotal experience. And that's what I'm basing all of these comments on. Yes, I do research about the topics that I speak about on the podcast, and I learn what I can about these topics across the board, but I'm not going to comment in any kind of, I'll use the word judgmental way, outside of my own anecdotal experience, simply because I have no foundation to do so. So I just wanted to make that point, and please keep that in mind as we move forward, okay? Also want to mention today's podcast I'm doing on my own, the reason being that I want to put these comments about this particular topic out there in an effort to spark some conversation and hopefully inspire some people to come on a podcast and talk to me about it in more detail. If you agree with me, if you don't agree with me, if you'd like some airtime to voice your perspective in the context of what we're talking about today or any other day, please feel free to step up. I would love to have you on the podcast. So let's get down to today's topic, which is all about rank. I want to talk about things like the value of rank, and why is rank so important, if it is important at all, and to whom is it important, the pros and cons and implementation of rank as a whole. So let's start this conversation, and I'm going to delineate between the various levels of what I'm talking about here. Please understand that from the outset, I am not including kids in this conversation. Teaching kids and promotion of kids through their rank is a completely different animal, at least I believe it is, and as such should be judged on a different scale than adults. So I'm happy to talk about kids and the effect of rank on kids and how kids are moved through the ranks, but that's a different podcast topic, so we'll put that aside for now. I'm also going to delineate between adult colored belts, the adult Q belts, and black belts. So let's start with the colored belts. So firstly, the question that comes up in my mind is, should colored belts be judged solely on their technical ability in order to qualify for promotion? And I don't believe that they should. I don't believe that the criteria for promotion through the Q belt ranks should be exclusively judged on technical ability. However, I do believe that technical ability should have the highest priority. Now, let me run through some of the other things that I believe and that I've also seen used as criteria for determining someone's readiness to be promoted. Things like personal integrity, dojo deportment, how do you handle yourself in the dojo? Respect for other students, respect for your instructors. Dojo contribution, how much do you contribute to the dojo? And I don't mean financially, I mean, do you help clean the dojo? Do you take part in dojo events? Do you help with teaching when asked? That sort of thing. And of course, as you go higher in a rank, those things become a little bit more important in the criteria of promotion. So the question again becomes, if we have this list of criteria, what order should that criteria take? And another offshoot question is, when can or should a colored belt be promoted without basic technical ability? I can't think of a circumstance where I would agree to promote a student or where I would promote a student unless they had that baseline skill level. All those other things we talked about, personal integrity and dojo deportment and contribution and all that stuff, that's important. But I would never say to somebody, I believe you should be promoted because you meet all of these other criteria, even though you don't have the baseline skill required for the rank you are testing for. I firmly believe that technical ability should have the highest priority of all of those other things. I'm not saying it should be exclusive. If someone has no integrity and does not show good dojo deportment, doesn't contribute to the dojo, doesn't teach, all of those things, if those don't happen, but they're very skilled technically, again, I would not choose to promote that individual. However, I also would not promote somebody if they do all of those other things, if all of that other criteria is met consistently without a baseline level of skill. So that's how I rank those particular criteria. As I said, I can't imagine a circumstance where I would agree with promoting somebody who doesn't have a baseline technical ability. And I've seen firsthand the various reasons that people get promoted. When a student moves through the ranks and becomes an integral part, or at least an active part, of the environment of the dojo, when they're tested and do not meet basic skill level criteria, I've seen so many instructors worry more about losing that student than about promoting them for good reason. Now, if it's about money, I don't even want to bring that into this conversation, because that is such a poor reason to promote somebody. And we're going to have a podcast in the near future about running a dojo as a business and how all of this feeds into that process. But to promote somebody to a rank simply so that you do not lose the dollars they bring into the club, I believe is an absolute betrayal of everything that karate is supposed to be about and that instructors are supposed to be representing. So if the reason for promotion has anything to do with not losing the money that that student brings into the club, I think that particular club should fold up its doors anyway, because they have completely lost sight of what's important. I remember coming up through the ranks, and I came up through the early ranks with a friend of mine. I met him at the club, actually. He's a very, very nice guy. His name was Ray. We moved through the ranks together, and I remember we both tested for our green belts together. And I was promoted, but he was held back. Well, as a result of that, he quit. And I have a great deal of respect for the comment that my head instructor made at the time, which was, if we decided not to promote him for good reason and he quit as a result, that just tells me that we were right in the decision not to promote him. That was a very telling comment, and one I've carried with me. If somebody is going to quit over not being promoted, I think that's a fairly clear indicator that not promoting that person was the right decision to make. Love to argue that point with anyone who takes the other side of it. Now, I always use as the first question I ask myself when I'm on a grading board or I'm being asked for my opinion about someone's readiness to be promoted, which decision to progress that student to the next rank or hold them back at their existing rank is going to serve the best interests of the student and their growth as a martial artist. And I think that is a very, very important criteria to discuss. There are certain responsibilities and certain expectations that grow greater and heavier as you progress through the ranks. If somebody has the basic technical ability but does not have the emotional ability to support movement upward through the rank yet, that might be a reason to hold somebody back. If their best interests are not going to be served by promoting them, then promoting them does them a disservice. I think there's too much emphasis given to the notion of positive or negative, good or bad, relative to promotion. It's considered a bad thing to be held back, and it's considered a good thing to be promoted. And in the context of karate, I think that those definitions are dangerous. I believe very often that a student will be better served in their journey in the martial arts by being told that they're not ready and having it explained to them, of course, why they're not ready. But anyway, we're drifting off topic a little bit. So when we talk about promoting people through the ranks, in my mind, it's very difficult to justify promoting somebody who does not have that baseline ability that baseline level of skill. Now, how does that habit get formed? Well, it's pretty easy to map out. And in the early stages, you can almost forgive it. You have someone who starts out, they come into the dojo, they're unsteady as most people are. They've been there for a few months and they're working hard. They haven't quite got it yet. They're still struggling with some of the technical aspects of some of the techniques, but they come every class and they try hard and they've got a great attitude. Sure, if we're testing somebody from a white belt to a yellow belt and that's how they present, I'm probably going to vote yes on whether or not that person should be promoted. We need to work with them, and as long as we do so and pull their skill level up, why not promote them? Why hold them back from that progress just because they're not quite at the level that they should be? Now, that's a very common argument, and one that I've made myself a number of times over the years. But the problem is it becomes easier and easier to forgive lack of ability. Look, I'll promote somebody from white belt to yellow belt for just trying their best, trying their ass off every class. That will get you a vote for me. At white belt to yellow belt, technical proficiency, are your arms generally moving in the right directions? Can you pick your foot up and stick it out in the right direction with generally the right level of technique? Great. Yellow belt, on we go. But the problem lies in that the more often that attitude is entertained in the progression of students through rank, the easier it becomes to promote students without their technical ability. I can't count the number of times over the years that I've heard black belts say, yeah, they're not really up to speed, but you know what? We'll work with them. And the student never gets worked with. And then they come up to their next grading. And they're then so immersed in an environment of lack of accountability for technical shortcomings that promoting them just becomes easier and easier. So yeah, I will be forgiving about lack of technical ability at the lower belt level. In my mind, once you hit yellow and you're testing for orange, trying hard doesn't matter. It's an expectation that you're going to try hard. You get points for it as a white belt going to yellow. At yellow belt going to orange, it becomes just an expectation of how you train. You don't get extra points for trying hard. So I think that's kind of the recipe for progression through the rank without technical ability, leading right up to black belts. And it's become epidemic in the circle of martial arts that I travel in and that I have experience with, from what I can see. Now, I'm not saying that everybody who is promoted through the ranks doesn't have base technical skill. Obviously, a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't. And this is where we start getting into the collateral effect of promotion without ability. When you have somebody who trains every day and they train hard and they come to class and they do the things and just bust their ass trying to get better at this thing, and they are tested along with someone of their same rank who doesn't try all that hard, misses classes consistently, just doesn't put the work in, but they're promoted as well. What impact do you think that has on the person who tries really hard? They're busting their ass. They see somebody promoted along with them who isn't trying, who doesn't demonstrate that want to learn and that thirst to get better, but they get promoted anyway. That student cannot help but start to look at their own rank and question whether they deserved that rank, because clearly promoting somebody who doesn't deserve the rank is not out of the question. So how do you see that as a student? How do you see someone promoted that way? And it doesn't even have to be someone of your own rank. If you see somebody else, especially at a higher rank, who's promoted with that lackadaisical attitude, how do you make your peace in your own head with the rank that you've been given when you see people being promoted without technical cause? I'm not sure that it's possible to run a club or to be a part of an association where that kind of promotion happens without it negatively impacting the perceptions of the other students. And more importantly, the students who really try hard and who do deserve their rank. I've had students coming up to me and specifically saying to me, I don't ever want to be promoted unless I deserve the rank I'm testing for. I can't count the number of students in the years past who have come up and said that to me. And that's telling of two things. First of all, it speaks very clearly to the fact that promotion without deserving the rank you're being promoted to happens, and happens consistently. Because if it didn't happen, they would have no cause to think that. If everybody who got promoted was clearly deserving of their rank, it would never enter a student's mind that they might be promoted without deserving their rank. It speaks very clearly to the fact that this type of promotion happens, I'm not going to say all the time, but consistently. Ironically, I have never known a student who has come up to me and said, you know what, I'd really like to be promoted. I don't really care if I deserve it or not. For the most part, students want to earn what they wear. They want to earn the rank they're wearing. And I honestly believe that when instructors promote students when they don't deserve the rank, do a horrendous disservice, not only to the student being promoted, certainly to the student being promoted, but not only to the student being promoted. This trickle-down effect happens, and there are visible signs that the students are aware of it. When a student is promoted when they don't deserve the rank, other students see that. It erodes their confidence in their own ability and their own rank, and I think on an even more telling basis, it erodes their confidence in the rank structure of the club and, by association, the black belts who define that ranking system. And it's tangible. I can see students seeing this promotion happen, casting a questioning eye not only on their own rank but also on the black belts. I've seen the head shakes, and I've seen the looks of incredulous disbelief when certain individuals have been promoted. And it's heartrending. It really, truly is. So that's my perspective on Q-belts going from rank to rank and why I believe that technical ability should play an incredibly prominent role in determining someone's ability, not ability, but deservedness to move on through the ranking system of that particular club or style. Now let's talk about black belts for a second. This one's a little rougher of a ride, I think. I've thought about this almost nonstop for the last few years, and I would dearly love for someone to explain to me where the value is in rank above first degree black belt. Black belt, it's an entity unto itself, and it's a clear delineation from the Q belt, which is the foundation of your learning, to black belt, which is supposedly the explosion of your learning because you've finally got a handle on the basics and now it's time to really sink your teeth into what lies ahead. Beyond first degree black belt, I am baffled by the notion that there might be some value to those ranks above black belt. It makes no sense to me. There just seems to be no reason for those ranks other than feeding the egos, not only of the people who are getting the rank, but of the people who are promoting them. Now, let me elaborate on this a bit. I've talked to a lot of people about this, and there are a lot of people who disagree with me, and I'm fine with that, and I would love to have somebody on the podcast to talk about this. But the two parallels that are often drawn when I ask about rank above black belt are, you know, they're very much like military ranks. That's the one I get the most. And the one I get second most often is they draw the parallel to scholastic achievement, moving through the different levels of university level achievement, bachelor's degree, master's, PhD, doctorate programs, on and on. So let me tackle both of those one at a time. So let's start with parallels to military rank. One of the base differences between military rank and rank within the martial arts is, in any single military organization, and we may as well talk about countries because that's generally how military organizations are bounded. In any single country's military organization, rank is consistent across the board. There are responsibilities based on the rank you have and also based on the rank that you might be moving to. There are training requirements specific to each rank. The postings you get, the responsibilities you have, the commands that you have as you move up in the rank, all of those are defined by your rank. Each rank has its own set of defined criteria. The structure is built in a way that's consistent across the military organization of that particular country. I'm not saying that there's no subjectivity. I am sure that there is a great deal of subjectivity in promotion in military organizations. But what I am also saying is the basic structure for promotion exists. If you want to become a major in the Canadian military, there is defined criteria by which you will be judged. Not so in karate. First of all, there's no consistency across karate, even in a small little organization or a small little geographical area, not organization, a small geographical area like Southern Ontario. There are dozens and dozens of clubs and many different styles represented across those clubs. And even clubs that train in the same style do not have a shared, defined ranking criteria that I have ever seen. I would love to see it. I would love to talk to somebody who's involved in an organization that does hold that level of defined criteria for movement through the black belt ranks. But by my experience, I've never seen it. So there goes your first analogy out the window. There just is no consistency across the karate ranks and the karate expectations and requirements for moving through the black belt rank. I've seen individuals promoted who literally have not put on a gi or participated in any karate-related activities, committees, association events, in literally years. They are promoted by definition without criteria, without cause, other than you've been around for a long time. It makes no sense to me. Are we so non-ego formed as adults that we're not able to understand if I don't contribute in some way, if I don't improve, if I don't meet some criteria other than just existence, then I'm not going to get promoted, and nor should I. The notion of criteria, not only from what I've seen, doesn't exist as you move through the black belt rank. And the higher in rank you get, the less defined the criteria becomes, the more subjective it becomes. Obviously, if we're promoting people who don't even train or discuss or contribute to the martial arts in any way, if they're still getting promoted, where's the criteria? Where's the consistency? You've been around forever, so you deserve rank. I've seen so many people promoted who have no business wearing a black belt based on the fact that they just hang around. They wait. They come to class. They train. They work out, I guess. But they never really throw their heart and soul into it. And they never really achieve the potential that's within all of us to be as good as they can be, as good as we can be. But they get promoted anyway. And as we get older, I understand that our physicality starts to fail. I'm experiencing that myself in a very telling way. I'm not as fast as I was 25 years ago. My power isn't what it was 25 years ago. So I understand the introduction of subjectivity more and more in the progression through the rank above black belt, especially as the practitioners get older and they move higher in rank. But what I don't understand is the complete lack of criteria, the complete lack of expectation that is sometimes associated with progression through those ranks. It makes no sense to me. I really believe that the parallel to military rank falls apart. Like I said earlier, if you get a certain rank in the military in one corner of the country and you travel to a different corner of the country and you serve there, your rank is what your rank is. The consistency and the requirement for rank stays inherent in the process, no matter where you are. But karate just isn't the same. There is so much difference in training and requirement and subjectivity. It's impossible to define consistent requirement for rank, even from clubs in the same style or in the same association. Honestly, I believe that the parallel to military rank, it really holds no water to me. Now, let's talk about scholastic achievement. And again, having said what I've said about the military, I think it's pretty obvious that the scholastic analogy is going to fall apart as well. Almost more so than any other organization that I've seen or looked into over the last few weeks in preparation for this podcast, scholastic achievement carries with it a definition and a requirement for progression through those levels, through bachelor degree, master's, PhD, on and on. There's requirement for study, there's publishing papers, there's contribution to the specific field of study. You can't just show up, not do the work, and still receive your bachelor's degree. It's one of the things I admire about the scholastic system, and I make this parallel all the time when we're talking about should somebody get a black belt or not. I hear it all the time. Well, you know, they try real hard, but you know what? They've got a really busy career. I don't know, pick a career that's, they're an air traffic controller. They work odd hours. They can only train when they can train. And they've been training consistently as much as they can, you know, maybe once every few weeks. And yeah, their skill level's not where it should be, but that's not their fault. They're training as much as they can. And that argument makes me crazy. Imagine somebody becoming a surgeon who doesn't really measure up to the requirements, but you know what? They've had some personal problems. You know, their father died a few months back and they're getting a divorce and they've had all these personal issues. So you know what? We're just going to let them pass. They don't need to meet the basic criteria. We'll just let them pass. That would never happen. I don't understand why it happens so often and with such regularity in karate circles. You're either meeting the criteria or you're not, at least promotion to first degree black belt. Either you're good enough or you're not. And when we promote people with excuses and with rationalization, it belittles the entire process. Now let's get back a second to the scholastic achievement thing. Like I said, each level of scholastic progression has very defined criteria. You can't fudge that. You either do it or you don't. You put the work in or you don't. Again, this is why that parallel to karate falls apart. So I'm back to what's the difference between a fourth degree black belt and a third degree black belt? Can anybody point to defined criteria, whether it's technically related or not, defined criteria that separates a second degree black belt from a third degree black belt? Is it just time? You hang around long enough as a particular rank and you'll get your next one? I'm starting to think that that is actually considered. This person's been around this long and they're only that rank. That doesn't make sense. Let's give them a rank. Well, is there an argument to be made there? Like, does that make sense? What value does my rank have if there's no criteria I need to meet in order to achieve that rank? As I move through, as an individual moves through those levels of rank, if there's no expectation of achievement, then where's the value in the rank? This is what I don't understand. Let's talk about the collateral effect of that, the collateral effect of that method of moving people through rank. When people are moved from one rank to another, especially, and we're talking now exclusively through the black belt ranks, contrary to popular belief, students aren't stupid. Students can see who the skilled practitioners are, and students can see who contributes to the dojo and who doesn't. Coming up through the ranks, looking at the spread of black belts who were training at the club, it was very obvious to me as a colored belt where the value lay with each of the black belts. There were some who had no value. They just seemed to be there taking up space. There were other black belts who were good at this and some were good at that, and these other ones were good at this over here. Students understand and see skill. They understand, especially as they move higher through the Q belts, the Q belt process, they see who the skilled black belts are. And when they see black belts being promoted alongside of other black belts who honestly do not merit that promotion, their eyes roll back into their head just like the other black belts do. People don't just blindly follow whatever happens at the club and assume, oh, okay, well, my head instructor said that this shall be, therefore it must be the right decision. That might exist at white yellow belt level, but as you progress through the ranks, that just doesn't carry any weight anymore. Students will start to understand that there is a lopsided perspective on promotion through the ranks. I was training with a black belt a while ago. This is a number of years back now. And he was promoting some of the black belts at his club through the ranks, and he was promoting three of them. All three were going from their second degree black belt to their third degree black belt. And his comment to me was, I'm promoting these two because they work hard, they're good, and they deserve this rank, and I'm promoting him to keep peace in the family. And that was an incredibly telling comment to me. It was the first time that it was admitted that someone will promote somebody for a political reason rather than a technically sound reason. I know of another club whose head instructor passed away, and the club was by default handed off to the highest ranked black belt they had, who was a second degree. And he'd been running the club for a year or two, and another black belt decided that it didn't make sense that he should only be a second degree black belt. He was running a club, therefore he should be a fourth degree black belt. So in a heartbeat, they promoted this individual for no reason other than he was a head instructor of a club and therefore should have that rank. It's madness. And I know for a fact that the black belts who were at that club looked at that and rolled their eyes hard because this individual flat out did not have the skill level to support that rank. The only reason that individual was promoted was because of their position as head instructor, which came to them by default. This is the kind of substantiation for promotion that erodes at the credibility of the entire process. It happens across entire organizations. That's one of the reasons, I believe, and one of the collateral effects of promotion without merit is it erodes the student's confidence, not only in the instructors at hand, but in the entire process. And as I said before, in their own ability. I hold a certain rank, and what that rank is irrelevant. I have yet to hang any of my certificates on the wall because I see promotion for political reason other than technical merit. I see promotion for reasons that are unsubstantiated in my view, and I can't help but doubt the validity of my own rank. Every now and then, I've got my certificate of my latest rank. It's in a lovely frame, and it's sitting on top of my kitchen cupboards. And every now and then, after I've had a couple of drinks, I'll take it down and I'll look at it, and I'll honestly consider, do I take any joy in this rank? And the answer is no, because the whole system is so polluted and so unfounded. I can't help but look at my rank and question it. I wonder if the people who perpetrate these promotions and move people through rank for political reasons and for monetary reasons, I honestly wonder if they're just unaware of that collateral effect of what they're doing, of how they're promoting these students through rank or these black belts through their ranks. It makes no sense to me. I can't understand how these promotions happen in such a vacuum. I was attending a black belt grading couple of years back now. This has gone back a little bit. The grading was for black belts only, and the lowest rank being tested at this grading was brown belt to black, and I believe the highest rank was no lower than fifth. So there were rank progressions. There must have been 25 people testing for various ranks through the black belt structure. The grading, honestly, embarrassing is the only word I can think of. The technical ability that was expected of the practitioners at the grading or of the hopefuls at the grading wasn't any higher than orange belt, maybe. The techniques done individually, no expectation of skill, to a large degree a very low demonstration of skill. I mean, I judge a grading on two levels. One, what's expected of the individuals being graded, and two, how do they perform inside of those expectations? And on both levels, it was disappointing, to say the least. Those who know me know I have a big mouth and I tend to make clear my perspective on things. So I happened to be sitting on the grading board. It was fairly clear to all within earshot that I did not think very highly of the process that was being displayed. Now, the irony here is after the grading was over, no less than three individuals, I remember three specifically, and one of them being one of the black belts who was being tested, I believe, for their third degree black belt. But these three individuals came up to me after the grading was over and absolutely agreed with the comments that I had been making. So those three individuals came up and made that clear to me. Now, they did it privately, and I'm certainly not going to mention their names. But the irony is, the very next day, there was a post made on Facebook about that grading. Two out of three of those individuals were posting on that thread, singing the praises of the grading and how great a day it was, and on and on and on. And I think this touches very significantly on how this kind of perspective festers and grows. People are so unwilling to stand up and say, this is wrong. This is wrong thinking. This is reflective of a perspective that does more harm than good. And I think that the collateral effect of that, of being unwilling to stand up and say, this is wrong, that this isn't a good thing, is that the people who perpetrate these types of gradings and these types of promotions are never challenged on it. And because they're never challenged on it, nobody ever points out what the collateral effect of those types of promotions and those types of gradings can be. It's no wonder that these perceptions grow and fester. And how many people who were promoted in that grading will go on thinking that the bar set for that grading is where grading bars should be set? They're challenged not at all during their grading, and therefore they are not going to challenge people who they may test in the future. It honestly is a trickle-down effect. If the powers that be at the top of the pyramid continue to pollute the black belt timeline with individuals who are not demonstrably able to perform even the most basic technique, if they're not held to a higher standard, they never will be held to a higher standard. And worse than that, when those individuals start their own schools and have students coming up through the ranks, they're not going to hold those students to a higher rank. Or to a higher, not a higher rank, but to a higher expectation. I really do believe that the problem is becoming epidemic. The number of skilled practitioners is growing low. Not to say that there aren't some skilled practitioners. There are some incredibly skilled martial artists out there right now. And it's an honor to know some of them and to train with some of them and to watch them do their thing. But that doesn't negate the fact that this epidemic process of promotion without merit is having a defined and tangible impact on the overall quality of the martial arts. So there you have it. Let's assume for a second that I'm right. And again, if you don't think I'm right, please post, support your position, argue with me. And by argue, I mean present an argument. I don't mean call me names. Although, what the hell? I mean, if you want to call me names, feel free. But I will value more a well-thought-out argument to some of what I've said here, or even better yet, come on the podcast. We can chit-chat about it over the podcast rather than doing it on Facebook. But anyway, now that we've presented that, let's assume that it's a big problem. How do we fix it? What do we do? Well, I don't see any way out of this except the obvious. Define your criteria for each rank. Maintain a baseline ability level for everyone who tests for those ranks and holds steadfastly to that criteria. There are some who will say that's a very naive perspective. If we continue to hold those standards high, we won't have a karate school anymore. People have said that to me. They have said to me, Mitch, your standards are too high. And if you try to run a karate school with those standards, your school will fail. You know what? Maybe that's true. I can only say in response to that, that if a school with standards lower will succeed and a school with standards higher will fail, I would rather see a well-defined, high-standard school fail than a mediocre school succeed. Once again, my name is Mitch Maxine. This has been the No Mind Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Comments, questions on the Facebook page, or again, send an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Love to hear from you, positive feedback or negative. If anyone would like to come on the podcast and chit-chat with me about this or any other subject, say the word. We'll make some time and make it happen. Thanks so much, folks, and we will see you in a couple of weeks.